Welcome. This is an interview conducted by Colin Burke of the Chemical Heritage Foundation with Professor Jacquemil Dubois. Professor Dubois, would you tell us a little about your early life and the influences that your family and education had in your career and choices?
Well, my father came from the north of France, and for generations we can trace our family as being from the border of France, and I was born in Lille, you know. But my mother came from the south. They both met, you know, when he came back from war. Well, he had been a prisoner of war for 54 months, you know, and his regiment was sent to the south of France. He met my mother and they got married. Now, my father had a family. His father was a military man by training, and in those days, I mean, the wives of the military people had to have dowries, you know. And my grandmother came from a rich family of people who were big wholesaler in grocery and producers of cider. But my father didn't go very deep into studies, but he went to England, where he stayed 5 years before he was made a prisoner in Germany for another 5 years. And so he was very fluent in four or five languages. And so after the war, I mean, he decided to start things in life. He remembered himself that he had been trained as a tailor in London for the court of England. And later on in his life, every time that there was a depression, like the Wall Street crack that happened also in France in the 30s, he couldn't make his life anymore in business, you know. He went back either to start a school for tailoring or to become a tailor for a while, you know. In fact, he lost most of the assets that we inherited in the family in the 30s, you know, because the north of France became very poor, the city became very in a difficult situation, and most of the apartments that he had were occupied by people who didn't pay rent. So overnight, I mean, we became very mortgaged, and so as a young child, you know, when I was 12 years old, the question was what should be done with me later, you know. But in the north of France, the tradition was not to send children to school, but to try to make men of them and try to have them make a living by the age of 17, 18 or 19. And families were very proud if they succeeded well in business or in small enterprises, you know. And so my father was very, very much against too much schooling, and his idea of freedom was that I should really like and learn to be good at languages. He sent me to England, to Germany, you know, and I learned these two languages quite well, fairly well for those period, you know. Most of the people didn't speak French or anything besides French in those years, okay? And his idea was also that he had taken a good school of painting when he was young. That school was very famous because the city where I was in Saint-Quentin in the north was the city of a great painter, and the Quentin de la Tour, and therefore the big museum of Quentin de la Tour was there, and there was that special school of Quentin de la Tour. So my father advised me to go there. I started on the weekends or on the Thursdays. And then I was selected to take the courses from 6 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock. So my position was difficult because my father didn't want me to study too much, but under the pressure of my teachers and the pressure of my mother, gradually I went through the normal courses. But it was slightly different because my father thought that he would like to stop me at the age of 16 to teach me cutting, to become a cutter, and also he thought I should go into the design business, you know, later on in Paris, where he had very many contacts, you know. But fortunately, thanks to the teachers, you know, and thanks to my mother, now it was not easy in the university, in the school, because they hated people who went to the drawing school, because the people who went to the drawing school were not coming to the lycée, you know, to secondary school at all. So at 8 o'clock in the morning, every fortnight, I would arrive late at the lycée, and the superior of the lycée would find me, you know, because he didn't like my pretext, because that was not a good pretext, I mean, to follow those courses. He thought it was good to become a painter, you know, for letters, you know, or to become an official painter or a producer, but not for somebody from his college. Anyway, so as my father was not insisting too much, I also became a good swimmer and became a member of the local water polo team. Now there again, there was nobody from the lycée, they were only very tough people, and you had to learn to become tough, you know, to survive, you know. Especially as the people thought that you were intellectual among people who were not intellectual, you know. So our team was not very bad. I did a lot of racing in swimming, you know. And came the time when all of a sudden, I mean, the lycée thought I should really go as far at least, I mean, to the college level. And then the family started to revise my father's position. Some members of the family advised him that I should probably go to an MBA school, a kind of MBA school in France. But on what condition was not very clear. But it seemed that one condition could be that I got good degrees, and if you got good marks, then you had more chances to be accepted, you know. So as my father was willing to make a compromise for that direction, at least I did not insist too much in science, and I decided in the last year of the college to go into philosophy. But unfortunately, 3 weeks later, the professor of mathematics was very unhappy with my decision, and he forced me to go into math class, you know. So I took the 2 degrees in math and philosophy. That was the only compromise I could make with my father for him to accept. So unfortunately, the war was coming, and there was not enough time for me to go to a university without knowing that within a couple of months I would be called in the army. We were in 39, you know. Yeah. And not knowing whether I was going to be called, I thought to myself that to prepare the MBA level in France was foolish, because I was good in mathematics, good in philosophy, I had good marks, you know, everywhere. So therefore, I decided that for the few months that were left, you know, before being called by the army, I would really ask the School of Chemistry in Lille, you know, if they couldn't take me, you know, not telling them what I was going to do. I mean, to follow my father's intention, I was going to give up if the war would stop, you know. But of course, the war, I mean, was only beginning, and it went on for years. So I went to the school, and of course, the German invaded France, and I was in the south of France. What should we do? I was in my mother's region, you know, and I had to decide. And my father insisted, before the family was parted and I was left alone there, my father insisted that I should take law as a compromise if I could. And so I registered, I went to Lyon. And during the invasion, I learned for 3 months, when the Germans were running after us, I learned a lot of chemistry and a lot of medicine. Because we were refugees with 2 other people who were much older than I was, and they had only books in chemistry and in medicine. And so therefore, I knew all of it, you know, by myself. Now, I was alone by myself a lot, you know. So therefore, I decided to go to Lyon. When I went to Lyon, I followed a couple of courses. I found the level was not very good, you know. I was not very interested by the physical chemistry there. So I decided to go to Grenoble, because the war was obviously going to be longer than we thought. And in Grenoble, I registered in law, and that gave me a free chance to go into the Faculty of Science. And then I took the normal courses in math and physics in that university. And I was lucky enough, even though I didn't have much means, you know, to survive very well, because the professor in physics was a good expert, one of the few experts in Europe on infrared spectroscopy. Ooh. And he had taken most of the equipment from Paris to Grenoble. But most of that equipment was helping the defense at the time, because we were measuring, I mean, the quality of fuel, you know, with the in infrared spectroscopy. And so all of this was hidden in Grenoble. And as he was a Jewish, he had to hide very often. Okay. So in no time, I became sort of by myself alone, but head of the physics lab, you know. And so I really became interested in instrumentation. Now, the half of my life during that trip was I got the Council of Research gave me by chance a grant.
This is the Vichy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't apply for it. It just happened that my knowledge of, I was reading everything on chemistry and physics, so therefore when somebody from Paris came, there was no train, there was no electricity, it was the war, you know. So my professor told me to talk with him, you know, and I had to keep him busy a whole day, and at the end of the day he asked me, what are your intentions? I said, what, to present a thesis? He said, but what you told me today, you have a lifetime of activities, you know. So 3 months later, 2 months later, without having any application at all, I received a letter from the Council of Research. This man was at the same time professor in Paris and vice director of the Council of Research. And 2 months later, I got a letter. I was heading a grant backwards for 3 months, you know. It was 7 o'clock, and I ran out, you know. I went to the black market and I ate, you know, 1 hour, you know, everything I could buy them into it, because I was getting a little money all of a sudden, you know.
You're 22 or 23 years old.
Yeah.
You already got a responsible position.
Yeah.
In, amazing.
Yeah, okay. I was 22, yeah. Well, in fact, I was more or less in charge of the lab because I was alone there, because he was always hiding somewhere. You know? And so I became, but I left that grant to become the, to take the job of assistant in general chemistry. Because that was the only one that became available. So in fact, I was doing my PhD in chemistry and in physics. You know? And I was a couple of months later, the reason why I had chosen Grenoble was mainly because I had relatives of my family who were refugees in Grenoble. So we met. Both of these people were sort of leftish people, and I decided to be against the Pétain regime, you know, who had given up France to the Germans, you know, and so therefore we had moved into the resistance from the very day I arrived in Grenoble, you know. And my friend being one of the great leaders of the underground movements in Grenoble, I became active, and gradually I became active as an in-between man between the different movements, because there was a lot of division between the movements, you know, and so I became active there. And I was, my professor in electrochemistry was killed, you know, by the German. One day I escaped the school of electrochemistry by chance, you know, and then I realized that it was more dangerous than we thought, you know, that the dean of the university was, of the Faculty of Science was also killed, you know. And the German had decided to send a couple of Gestapo people, I mean, to sort of teach us, you know, to become less resistant, you know. But all in all, I ended up the war being one of the 7 members of the small committee running the underground movement for the Alps, for the Northern Alps, I mean, the region of Grenoble and part of the northern part, southern part of the Annecy region. So, of course, several months, two times I had to stop during my studies, you know, for those reasons, you know, and each time I came back. Now, a lot of people during those periods didn't do a lot of research, you know. So in the end, I ended up by being among the very few who got a PhD during the war, you know. Now, in Grenoble in particular, you needed to have a lot of organization and a lot of patience and stubbornness to be able to get to get your PhD, because life was very different, very easy for people who wanted to make money on the black market, you know, everything was difficult. But I'm in 45, when the war was beginning to end and the Americans came through the city, I was in charge of a couple of things, everything worked well, but for 7-8 months I was in the politics of running the city, you see. Running the city. And that's when I learned how to appreciate people and see the people. During the war, I mean, your life was at a price, you see, that was clear, you know, and so people did not betray too much each other. But when you move right into after the liberation, into the political aspect of running the city, you find that the things are very different. And after 8 months, I decided to stop everything and not really to go into politics and come back to my thesis and finish my PhD. That's the story.
Well, it seems like many of the things that you'll be into and successful in your later career, you'd already been into in your youth.
Yeah.
Yesterday you mentioned to me also that the resistance movement experience got you in contact with many people who later became very influential in France.
Yeah.
And helped with your career.
Yeah.
It, that's amazing.
Well, in fact, I had a lot of maturity, probably already, but it gives you a lot of maturity.
Yeah. Self-confidence. Now, after that, you were awarded your PhD formally in 1947, right?
Yeah.
And then you were able to go to London to do research.
Well, the point is, my professor, Freeman, became a professor of physics in Paris later, but his mentor was Professor Bauer, who was the chair of physical chemistry in Paris, and was a professor before at the Collège de France, and as he was Jewish during the war, he was in Switzerland. And as soon as the war ended, you know, Freeman went back to Paris, and I stayed in Grenoble, and I would only go to Paris from time to time to do some experimental work, you know. But Bauer became a mentor for me, you know. He was called a grandfather scientifically, and his views were that French chemistry was not what it should be, and he wanted me to go abroad, you know, because he said, during the war you have been alone, you know, and you should really go out now because you are worth it, you know, and you shouldn't stay here. And it's obvious that I ended up in 48 with a professorship, you know, in Grenoble. And he said, you should give it up, you know. I was assistant professor in Grenoble, but he said, you should give that up, because in fact I have organized for you, so I had a trip to Belgium. And then he gave me the Ramsey Scholarship, which is a big, scholarship that is only given every 5 or 6 years.
Very big honor.
So the problem was, where should I go in England, you know? It had been arranged by him, and now he didn't like the professors of chemistry at the Sorbonne, because he said that they were sort of conservative, and he advised me to go to Ingol in London. And unfortunately, I had already promised to go to Cambridge in spectroscopy. I saw a lot of advantage in learning kinetics at the London School, you know, University College. So I made a compromise. At least I thought I was making a compromise to stay half a year there, and the rest of the time I would go to Cambridge. But in fact, I stayed the whole time in London, because I found that it took more time to get used to kinetics, you know, than I thought, you know. And also, it was the first time I was in a big city with all the advantage intellectual and painting and intellectual activities and intelligent people that we met. So therefore, that's how it worked, you know.
Yesterday, you talked to me about your appointment. Talk to me about your appointment as a scientific advisor while you were in London.
Yeah.
Did that help you later on in your career as
a very good point, too. When I was in London, I went to see the cultural attaché, the counselor, and probably in those days I impressed well, because in fact he took a look at me and he said he would like me to act unofficially as his scientific advisor in London during my postdoctorate at University College. And that helped me tremendously, because 3 times a week I would spend 2 hours at the embassy, and I also had an occasion to go to the big scientific meetings, almost as a journalist from the embassy. Also, I believe that any time he invited some scientists, you know, he needed to have somebody also, and I was the man to be invited as the scientist of the embassy. So, in fact, it did help me, I mean, because I met the people, and I also got a different view, being outside, of how science worked in France. You know.
That's very important for your later career.
Yeah, very important, yeah. So when I came out, you know, I got 5 offers to get a professorship in France at the end of my stay in London, during my stay in London. Now, it was easy in those days, because not many people had really taken PhD during the war, you know. So I was in the position, and also not many people had really done it in spectroscopy. I mean, I was lucky enough to have been in most advanced spectroscopy. And I had also been lucky in Liège to see the first Beckman that arrived from the United States.
Oh.
So I went from a sort of lab infrared apparatus that was really not working most of the time to a technical apparatus that gave answer right away. But by the way, it gave difficult time sometimes, but it was at least a modern apparatus. So the industry was trying to get me into industry and the university. So for a while
Proposal from two big industries, you know, and one French and one international one, and I didn't know what to do. Then all of a sudden I got an offer from the United States to be assistant professor in the United States.
Oh.
So at that point I decided to call the French, call the French higher education system, you know, the director, because I needed to be seconded, you know, I needed for a grant. It was okay. But then I was still a civil servant as assistant in Grenoble, you know, and I had been temporarily assistant professor, so I needed to have the permission. So, unfortunately, it didn't work very well because the general director asked me on the telephone to come the next morning, and I took the plane and I arrived in the boat, and I arrived in Paris, and we became very friendly with the director. The general director had a lot of work and a difficult situation. He was creating a new university in Saarbrücken between France and Germany, and he had nominated all French people who were not really real professors or real people, and the situation was sort of shaky there. That he didn't tell me. He gave me the whole big picture of it, and he said that first of all, if I insisted not to go there, my life would become very difficult, and if I insisted, would become very friendly, and he would really be behind me. And that's how it started very well, because in fact we started a friendship that went on for about 15 years, and it's he who really asked me to take his post again in the university in the ministry later on. So in fact, that was not negative to that extent, you know, because it was somebody who was really very high up in the system.
It's also an important job because, as you described yesterday, this new university in the occupied section of Germany was intended to be part of a grand plan to create an international community there.
That's why I said
it was politically critical.
Even though, I mean, I had many friends in Germany before the war, even though I was caught by the Gestapo during the war, I escaped from that, you know, I felt that after the war, when he asked me to go to Saarbrücken, my feeling was sort of relief. I thought that we should really end up in these difficulties between the two countries, and I love the Rhine region, so I decided to go, you know. Now, my German was good enough for that, so there was no problem, and so I went there, and I found that locally, I had to make a lot of compromises, not to inject the French way of looking at education to the Germans, you know, so that they would barely react later on. So in fact, I made the compromise to make good connection with the German university not far from Saarbrücken, and I created a hybrid system where our students in chemistry ended up with German title recognized in Germany and the title of engineers for France, you know. And I also decided to take somebody from England, and we kept the teaching in three languages, French, English, and German. Oh. This way it didn't look as if I were imposing, I mean, the French methodology to the Germans. Now, the students we had were very intelligent, very poor students. All the intelligent ones, all the rich family would probably send their children to Germany, you know. So these people were probably having their fathers and already in the mine, you know, in the mines around there. So I had very few students, but I dropped all of them more or less to a PhD, you see.
Yeah.
So it was very, very nice years of my life there.
Well, you spent, 5 years there?
Well, he asked me to stay 2 years, but then after 3 years I went back to him and I said I wanted to go back to France, you know, and they said, why? What's the reason? I said, because that's the term of my engagement. And they said, well, we are making you a full professor in the French system. So I said,
whoa!
And also, I got married at 32, and within a year, everybody thought that from a young bachelor to a mature professor, a married professor, they could make a dean, so I became dean of the faculty at the age of 33, you know.
Wow.
So then my friend from Paris...
This is the University of Paris? Or
Saarbrücken. So then he asked me to stay there, and he wouldn't help my career, and he said that whatever would happen, he would really manage that I would go wherever I would like afterwards in France. Now, at the end of in 1958, when things went bad, you know, politically, and that the dream of the international university considered sort of shaded, you know. Unfortunately, the decision had to be made, and most of the French people went back to France. Now, I was asked by the Germans to be an invited professor for another year, why I was nominated to Paris University, you see. And five of my students who were working with me at the time did very well with my successor and became full professors in Germany later on in physical chemistry. So that was that was a good success. And I have still very good connection with the ESAR University and also with the Regensburg University, one of the Western universities.
How did you manage to meet an American girl? To marry.
It's she who made the trip. She was not really specializing in French. She had specialized several ones in Spanish,
yeah.
And she was very good in Spanish. But then she decided with another member of her family and a good friend of hers, the three girls decided to come to Paris. And three of them married with foreigners.
Oh.
two with French people and one with a Dane. In fact, we met in Paris at the Sorbonne.
Oh.
I met in Paris at the Sorbonne. I was a young professor, and I'd come to Paris for a couple of things, so we met there and we got. Now, we didn't get married overnight. I mean, we corresponded and we got married 2 years later.
Huh? Well, let's stop this tape. It's about over, and then talk about your movement into administration and how you're able to do it, a lot of administration and still do research of very advanced nature. Yeah.